John suggested my first two talks here are essentially two halves of one talk, but they wouldn't fit in 15 minutes. So the first part, we're looking at essentially the challenges associated with entering a developing world with biotech. And the second part, we'll flip over and take a look at the rewards or the benefits we expect to generate by making this effort. First thing I'd like to do is, and these are some of the contributing authors for this work. I'd like to talk a little bit about the country itself, Burkina Faso. It's landlocked sub-Saharan Africa, a former French colony. If those of you who are as old as I am remember your elementary school geography, it was Upper Volta at one time. It became independent in the 1960s and actually changed its name in the 80s to Burkina Faso, which in the local Mosi language means land of the upright or land of the honest people. Has about 15 million people, roughly the same number of people you'd find in a state like Illinois. It's about the size of the state of Colorado in terms of land area. It is totally dependent on subsistence agriculture. Greater than 80% of people engage in subsistence agriculture. 50% live on less than a dollar a day. Very low per capita income, low life expectancy. Really not that much better than a place like Afghanistan in terms of life expectancy. And the UN Human Development Index ranks it 176 out of 177, so in basic terms, the second poorest nation on Earth. And these are some of the reasons it's at the bottom of that list. A lot of what I would call weather and environment-related problems associated with the area that make agriculture difficult. Insects and disease, and also political situations, regional wars, although Burkina Faso has been pretty stable for a number of decades, some of the countries around it haven't been. It's resulted in large fluctuations of refugees and additional economic strains on other countries. Disease is a big problem. Malaria, this part of the world has some of the highest malaria transmission rates in the world. 15,000 children a year, it's estimated, die from malaria in Burkina Faso. Meningitis outbreaks every dry season. 2 years ago, they had 10,000 cases with 1,000 deaths. Periodic yellow fever outbreaks. And then in terms of literacy, roughly 30% literacy rate. And in some parts of the country, especially the northern part, less than 20% of the females ever get any type of formal education, and that includes primary education. If there's a bright spot in the country, it's cotton production. The country can produce, in good years, over 500,000 hectares of cotton. The yield is quite low. That's less than half the average yield of U.S. cotton. Roughly a quarter of a million metric tons of lint produced per year, and it's all exported. In past years, it was in Europe, but now it's almost all exported to Asia. And it's the economic engine that runs the country, responsible for close to 60% of its export earnings. The industry is characterized by small farms almost exclusively. All manual labor, about 3 million people involved in cotton production, and this is about 350,000 growers, their families, and seasonal hires that they use, and another 3 million involved in collateral industry, ginning, transport, seed crushing and seed cake, and oil production. Virtually all cooking oil in Burkina Faso is cottonseed oil. And it's used locally or the immediate neighboring countries. The industry itself is vertically integrated. There are a few cotton companies, and these are more or less co-ops. The largest one is Sofitex, and that's the one at the top, and it's responsible for about 87% of the acres in Burkina Faso. And these cotton companies act as kind of one-stop shopping. It's it's where the growers get everything. They get the seed, they get all the inputs on credit. The seed companies own the gins, and it's market access for their growers. It's kind of like the company store, but to balance that negative aspect, if you look on the right-hand side, Burkina Faso has a very strong cotton growers union with a very influential and politically connected president. And the growers have quite a bit of economic and political clout in the cotton industry. You can see here at Sofitex, in the largest company, the growers union owns 30% of that company. And then the other smaller companies, they own substantial pieces. Now, how did Monsanto get involved in Burkina Faso cotton? Well, since 2001, there have been some discussions between key stakeholders in Burkina and some of our business and regulatory folks. But the real turning point was in 2003 at a ministerial conference in Sacramento. Ag ministers all over the world listened to Rob Fraley talk about cotton technology as we look at it. And at that meeting, the Minister of Agriculture from Burkina Faso, under the authority of their president, directly asked our chief technology officer, Rob Fraley, if Monsanto would get involved and help them to understand the potential value of this technology to their key industry. And Rob said yes. So when Rob said yes, we all had to jump in line. The first thing we had to do was take a step back and see exactly what the hurdles would be. Just how much is this going to cost? And what are the problems we would expect to encounter? The biggest one was the lack of an ag biotech regulatory structure. In terms of evaluating biotech products through testing and commercialization, Burkina Faso was totally naive, as are many developing parts of the world. To go along with that, they have limited regulatory and technical capacities. There aren't a lot of biotech experts within the scientific and legislative community in Burkina Faso. And if you take that down to the general populace level, there's not a lot of biotech literacy. And this has kind of a more general concern for us is in that it's very easy for anti-GMO groups to get a lot of traction in a place like this. There are no experts around to say, hey, wait a minute, BT cotton does not cause cancer, and your cows won't die if they eat a leaf. Now, the first thing we had to address was that regulatory concern. And in order to get any type of field studies done, that is to actually get the technology out there for people to see, we had to establish compliance standards for the first confined field trials. Standards that we understood would be under a lot of scrutiny because this is kind of a first-time deal for this part of the world. But Burkina Faso stepped up and created a provisional biosafety committee to oversee these early field trials. It was comprised of the appropriate ministers and key scientific advisors. So if there were people in the country that understood biotech, they put them together in this kind of ad hoc committee to help regulate these early trials. And the trials were done by the Burkina Faso scientists themselves through a formal research agreement between Monsanto and INRA, which is their ag ministry's version of our USDA ARS, their research, government research group in agriculture. While we were preparing and doing these early field trials under the supervision of that provisional agency, the legislature got busy, drafted and reviewed a biosafety law, established their regulatory agencies, in other words, their competent authorities, the ones who would be making the decisions later, and established their responsibilities and thereby the National Biosafety Agency and key scientific advisory committees were put together, and actually individuals were put in place. The formal law was completed, ratified by the legislature, and signed by the president in 2006. So by the spring of 2006, all the instruments were in place for Monsanto or any company, any industry, any technology provider to come in do confined field trials and make application for commercial release. To get this done, and to back up just a minute, this is quite a monumental accomplishment for a country to go from zero biosafety legislation to fully signed legislation and framework in just a couple of short years is quite an accomplishment. And I credit the Burkina Faso government and the key stakeholders to make that happen. During that time, a lot of capacity building efforts were taking place. To get those things done, some of the things that were mentioned on that past slide, there was a lot of training done in biosafety regulation, legislation, and compliance. And I'll talk about some of the actual parties that did this work in a second. The actual capacity building in the area of working with transgenic plants, the efficacy, stewardship, environmental safety, economic studies, were all done through the actual field trials by the local scientists, and they have resulted in a number of publications. This is where some of the local scientists are getting published in international journals for the first time. Training was performed for working local scientists and extension people, people who would be working with growers in terms of deploying and utilizing the technology. Local and regional media training took place to educate the local media. And then on the grassroots level, radio and print communications were done to educate farmers and the general public. And as I'll mention later, there were a number of field trials and opportunities for all stakeholders to see results of studies and visit the field. Now, Monsanto, if you look at all of these bullets, the one we played the largest part in was the second one, where we worked together with the local scientists, providing our experience in terms of protocols for confined field trials and these types of studies. We found that the local scientists were very good classically trained field biologists. That component of transgene was the only thing they hadn't worked with before. So they produced some very nice work. As far as the other bullets are concerned, Monsanto's role was more or less a facilitator. We understood who in the government and the local scientists and in the Burkina Faso community who needed the type of training that other groups could provide, and we linked them up with interested third parties who had as their kind of a general desire to do a number of things: improve development in the developing world, improve agriculture in Africa or West Africa, improve cotton production in West Africa, or establish regulatory frameworks that were science-based in developing parts of the world. And these are some of those agencies and groups and some of the things they provided. So there were a lot of people involved working with the folks in Burkina Faso to build capacity and establish the ability and the competence to move forward with confidence in assessing and eventually approving release of biotech. These are just a few of the publications that have come out in just the last year, resulting from some of that technical capacity building. Other aspects of the capacity building, this is a USAID National Cotton Council sponsored C4 entomologist workshop. Entomologists from Burkina Faso and some of the local countries, this was one group of entomologists. There were agronomists and some other ag scientists that took part in similar programs, come to the U.S. for a couple of weeks, receive a two-week workshop at Tuskegee, and get out into the U.S. and see this technology used by local growers successfully. Other opportunities were created for visiting scientists. This was a three-month visiting scientist program. A Burkina Faso cotton breeder came to Tuskegee for some remedial biotech training and some biotech breeding training. This particular scientist was part of a subsequent program where this breeder and some other breeders from local countries came to the U.S., studied for 3 months at the University of Arkansas, and then did a subsequent 3 months at New Mexico State University, all looking at aspects of molecular breeding and breeding with transgenes. On a more practical level, during the early field trials, the cotton that was tested in Burkina Faso contained BT genes in U.S. germplasm. During that time, backcrossing was taking place in the U.S., where our technology was brought into their germplasm. And to help us make selections of those progeny rows, we brought over the Burkina Faso breeder to make sure that the lines that contain these BT genes also contain the agronomic and fiber qualities that they were very proud of and wanted to maintain. And then in terms of communication and transparency, the local scientists and government were very good about providing annual reviews of the data where the scientists that did the work stood up, talked about the results. No one left until all the questions were answered and all the stakeholders were involved. And these were also often combined with field trips at earlier parts of the year. So that is the end of the first part. And essentially what I've done is describe some of the challenges, what was done to address those challenges. And for the next part of the talk, I'm going to flip right over and talk about the rewards. Just if we can do these things successfully, what do we expect out of the other end?